Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Getaway Friday, June the 18th, 2021, 19 and a half minutes past the hour. And there has been a lot of local news this week and as of late, and it continued yesterday as we learned that the long-term story involving Judge Jason Warner continued yesterday as Judge Warner resigned following his release on bond. And this was done with a letter, and we have the letter here. Now, what we're going to do, this is something we normally wouldn't do, but there's a lot to this letter to unpack. So we're going to go through this letter with our guest this morning, and I'm so glad he's with us this morning to explain some of this, because, as I say, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. So our guest for this hour is Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan. Ray, how are you?
Doing well, Scott. How are you this morning?
Doing good. Before we get into this letter, because I kind of want to take this paragraph by paragraph to try to understand this, the resignation, what did you make of it when it came about?
Well, I was pleased, in large part because, quite frankly, I think this has been a long time coming. And I think, ultimately, after he was found guilty by Judge Cosgrove and after he was sentenced by Judge Cosgrove, he was still the judge. And so, you know, my office, for example, would return indictments from the grand jury. And at that process, the clerk's office then gets the filing, and it has to be assigned to a particular court or a particular judge. And we're seeing Judge Jason Warner's name still on there. And I think a lot of people assumed that after he was found guilty, and certainly after he was sentenced, that he would no longer be the judge. And while it is certainly true that the Supreme Court suspended him and essentially kept him from doing his duties as a judge, and he was not being paid anymore, he still technically was the judge, which creates a bit of a problem in that we don't have a vacancy, and so the office is still being held. And so it was at this point, my staff and I, about a week after he was sentenced, and we had confirmed that he had been at the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, in other words, he was in prison, started having discussions about any steps that, you know, potentially we could take. And it turns out there's a special action called a writ of quo warranto. And essentially what it is, it's an extraordinary writ or court order that can remove an individual from office if that individual holds the office illegally. And in this instance, because he has been, he had been convicted of a felony and was sentenced for that, we believe that it made him ineligible and that his seat should be vacant so the governor can appoint somebody else. So we had conversations with the Attorney General's office about the filing of this, and I will tell you, Scott, we had it drafted, ready to go, when we received the letter that he had resigned. And just last week, my office, a member of my staff here had reached out to Mr. Szymanski, who is Jason Warner's attorney, and we said, here's where we're at. We think we're going to be filing this, and they asked for a little bit more time. Quite frankly, they asked till Monday, and it turns out that that's when he went ahead and filed his resignation, which is good in the sense that it now it prevents another layer of litigation. We can finally move on from this, and the governor can appoint somebody.
Now, this is an elected position, but the governor will appoint somebody. Do we know about how long that takes or what this person, do they have to be in Marion County? How does that all happen?
So in order to be a judge, the individual has to be a lawyer, and they have to have practiced for at least 6 years. And because the governor is a Republican, the local Republican Party will submit names to the governor for people that they would like to be considered for the position, but ultimately it'll be the governor's decision. And you know, my hope is that this will be done here in the next few months. I know when Judge Heiser was appointed to the Marion County Family Court, that took about 8 months, as best I can recall, but we were in the middle of a pandemic and so on. So given the state of affairs now, my hope is that within the next 2 or 3 months, we'll have that seat filled.
Does this have to be a Marion County resident?
Yes. So in order, you have to be an elector of the county. In other words, you have to be able to vote in the county, which means that you have to live in the county and be a registered voter.
Now, I want to come back to this letter, but before we do, because we haven't had a chance to talk since the Warners were let out on bond, and there was a lot of conjecture about that whole issue.
Yeah. Rightfully so.
Yeah. Well, how did that happen?
Well, so ultimately, the rules of criminal procedure allow for a defendant to the rules of criminal procedure allow for bond and conditions of bond pre-trial. They also do allow for an individual to be placed on bail or bond pending an appeal. That has to be made, the motion for that has to be made first with the trial court. So after an individual is convicted and sentenced, the motion is made with the court, as it was in this case with Judge Cosgrove. She denied it and said, essentially, we're going to carry out my sentence. And they then filed, as part of the appeal, they filed a motion with the appellate court, which is in Lima, and asked those judges there to release both Mr. and Mrs. Warner while the case was pending. And the Third District Court of Appeals did it. I will tell you, in the years that I've been practicing here in Marion, I am unfamiliar with any other instance in which an appellate bond was given. I am not aware of a single time, other than for Mr. and Mrs. Warner, that the Court of Appeals has released somebody from a Marion case while the case was pending. And quite frankly, it's so rare that I don't know how many appeals that I've done, both when I was in private practice as well as my time as prosecutor, but the issue itself has never even come up. So this was extraordinarily rare. I was surprised by it. And, it's an anomaly, really, to the ordinary course.
What do you chalk that up to, then?
Oh, that's a great question, Scott. I don't know what to chalk it up to, but certainly when I look at social media and I talk to members in the community, there really is a sense from some people that, there's two systems of justice. And, given, quite frankly, given what, what we've seen, I can understand people having that opinion. I was having breakfast with my wife and my children shortly after the issue came to light, and I had a community member explain to me, how in the world does this happen? Is this ordinary and so on? And I had to tell them I'm unfamiliar. You always know it's a possibility, right? You know that this particular course of action is possible. The law allows for it. It is certainly something that is contemplated in the rules, but you just don't see it. And so this person was very upset by it, and I can understand that. What I would chalk it up to, I'll leave that to the listeners. But needless to say, I've been approached several times by people who were very, very upset.
The feeling from people who have called in, because people have called in about this, is you know, justice is supposed to be blind, but if you are able to hire a really good attorney, I guess the idea is, for most people, I guess the best way to explain it is, if you're Bob Smith in Marion and you're making $30,000 a year and this same incident would happen to you, chances are this isn't going to happen for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I can certainly understand an individual having that thought, and I think from my experience, you know, with cases here, that I think, you know, that thought is certainly, I think held by many people, and I can understand it, and I think given the circumstances, I think the notion that, well, if this happened to me, this wouldn't be the case, I think is a I will say this, the individual would certainly have the opportunity to file for and you know, to have their sentence stayed pending their appeal. I mean, the ability to file for it is available to everybody, but I understand the angst that some people have when they say, well, wait a minute, you know, if this had been me, and you know, I work at Whirlpool, or if I'm, you know, I'm just a regular guy, you know, or gal, that this wouldn't have happened for me, I think is absolutely understandable, and you know, it's hard not to be able to sympathize with that point of view.
It's very interesting, because when the conviction came down, so many people said, prominent people in the community, that this is a good day for the justice system, justice was served, and this is the way it goes. Does this kind of mar that, this anomaly, as you say?
I sure hope not. You know, the Third District Court of Appeals judges are... they're good men. They're very good jurists, and they are going to look at the merits of the appeal and make a decision. You know, I think given the other aspect of this, for some community members, you know, sure, yeah, I mean, you certainly, the individual who came up to me while I was having breakfast and, you know, expressed their displeasure with what had occurred, you know, to some, it may very well. What I would say, though, is that this does not mean that the issue is done and over with. It's just that, you know, they are going to look at the appeal and make a decision, and, you know, it's, so we'll have to wait and see what it is that they ultimately do.
We can't get inside anybody's head, but before we get into the letter, timing is everything. Timing is important. This happened over a year ago. There was never a resignation during the trial, at the time of the conviction, while Judge Warner and his wife were in prison for a little bit there, released on bond, and now here comes the resignation letter before the appeal. Now, do you think this was done just, well, I think it's time to resign, or I'm going up for appeal, it would be nice to have this letter and to say that I've done this for the public?
You know, you said it perfectly. We can't get into the mind of another person. What I can tell you is that in the days leading up to the letter, which is dated June 14th, so Monday, we did reach out to his lawyer and explain that we were going to seek his removal if he didn't resign. And the deadline that was imposed, I won't call it a deadline, right? But the timeline, there we go, that was imposed was Monday. And his lawyer said, well, we will get with you no later than Monday and let you know. But I think, you know, we made it clear that we were going to seek his removal from office because, quite frankly, the citizens of Marion County deserve to have their judge serve, and he was unable to do that. So, you know, how, again, I've not spoken to Mr. Warner, so I don't know how much effect, you know, perhaps knowing the filing was going to be made, that writ for the petition for the writ of quo warranto was going to be made, perhaps it served as a bit of a motivator. I don't know. But I'm just glad that ultimately the resignation happened, and we can, in some sense, move on from this.
That's an interesting point, because I haven't seen that anywhere in any of the write-ups in this over the last 24 hours, that in this timeline, that the deadline, or at least the point of we are going to do this, we are going to seek removal, came on the same day that this letter was written. Again, we can't get into anybody's mind, but that's ironic.
Yeah, and I think I will tell you, because we had not seen the letter, because it was sent to Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor of the Supreme Court, as well as Governor Mike DeWine, but it was not sent to us. And so as a result of that, I kid you not, yesterday at about 2:45, I'm in communication with somebody from the Attorney General's office, and we're getting this filing fired up, and we're going to file it and get it ready. And like I said, it's drafted, it's ready to go. And I got a call from Judge Edwards, who said, "Hey, would you mind bringing your staff over at 3:30?" And so he called about 3:05, and I said, "Okay." And then before we went over there, I kind of figured what we were going to be talking about. He and I went back into chambers, and he told me that they had received a letter and that the Supreme Court had forwarded it to him. So I immediately sent an email to the Attorney General's office, as well as to my staff, and said, "Hold on, don't file anything with the Supreme Court, because we've received a letter."
Do you believe that is what happened?
I can't confirm it, but I think. Knowing that the filing was going to be coming may very well have been what motivated Mr. Warner to submit his resignation.
Knowing that, in the audience hearing that, does that again mar a gesture that people had been waiting on for a long time, this resignation?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, and again, as I said, the legal issues that are raised in the appeal that will be up to the Third District Court of Appeals, and they are fine jurists, and they're going to review this top to bottom, and they will make their decision in the coming months. Aside from that, though, whether he was driving or not, I think, is irrelevant. His wife, Mrs. Warner having a panic attack after the accident, I think it is irrelevant. All of that irrelevant to the issue of whether or not he can remain the judge. And what I mean by that is nobody called for help. So even in the event that you have to assist your wife, which I can appreciate, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I can appreciate that. But the lack of empathy or responsibility to call for help to get Colton Gray the help that he needed, even while trying to calm your wife down and make sense of this incredibly chaotic situation, he didn't do it. He never did it. Well, and he can't be a judge anymore.
And I want to go through this letter, and we'll stop at certain points to answer some questions, because this is kind of interesting. Again, this letter is dated June 14th, 2021. It did go to Governor Mike DeWine, as you said, and Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor. This is what it says. "It is with profound sadness that I hereby resign the position of judge of the Marion County Court of Common Pleas, General Division, effective immediately. As you know, I was recently convicted of felony offenses of complicity to leaving the scene of an accident and complicity to tampering with evidence, in spite of the fact that I have dedicated my entire life, adult life, to public service and had no previous criminal record. I was sentenced to 2 years in prison. The incident that ultimately led to my conviction involved a horrible accident in which I was the passenger in a vehicle being driven by my wife. My wife, while attempting to make a left turn, failed to yield to an oncoming vehicle, resulting in a collision. In light of rumors, allegations, and assumptions which have been made To the contrary, I feel compelled to clarify that I was never driving our vehicle on the night of the accident. On the lives of my children, I was not driving prior to the accident. I was not driving at the time of the accident, and I did not drive after the accident. Furthermore, I was not complicit in my wife's act of leaving the scene of the accident, which act was also deemed to be tampering with evidence, as I did not assist, incite, or encourage her to do so in any way. She did what she did while in a hysterical panic, and there was nothing that I could say or do to get her to stop. Okay, before we go to the next paragraph, there's a couple questions here about this. And this has been asked before, and I've tried to avoid this question, but it's asked all the time. It sounds like he's throwing his wife under the bus here. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, certainly. It sounds exactly like that's what he's doing. Yeah, and it's very, this paragraph, I think, is very similar to what he said at his sentencing hearing, he said, matter of fact, I think he said, on the lives of my children at the sentencing hearing. I don't doubt that he was, that Mrs. Warner was the one who was driving. But again, I think, in terms of whether or not he could be the judge anymore, whether she was driving or you were driving, at the end of the day, you didn't pick up your phone, you didn't call, you didn't text, you didn't stay, you did nothing to help, other than get back in the car to help Colton Gray. And I think I think it's interesting that he seems to be seeking to put this entirely on his wife, which I have my own personal feelings about. Never mind that. We get into very specific language that he knows is the language that the judge would have had to consider, right? They assist, incite, or encourage her. Well, I mean, we're still taking this position that I didn't do anything wrong, and quite frankly, Judge Cosgrove completely disagreed with that.
Well, another thing here, and we all know, and I've been at parties, I've been at little gatherings, I've been around, and for some reason this driving issue does come up, and maybe it should, who was driving, but the fact remains, it's my understanding that they both walked over to the car and that there were witnesses to this. That seems like the far bigger problem here, and for some reason, now maybe he does understand it, Judge Warner, but that always seems to be missed. In things that are said.
I agree with you completely. If he got out of the car, which I believe he did, and because that's what the witness testimony seems to demonstrate, that there were two people who got out of the car, was able to appreciate the situation. And by that, I mean appreciate that there's been an accident, there's another car involved, and there's an individual in this other car who is incapacitated and may very well be seriously injured. And in light of all of that, still got back in the car and left without staying to make sure that the kid was okay, without calling, without texting, without going to knock on one of the neighbor's doors who saw what occurred. I think the statement is incredibly self-serving, but more than that, I don't think it's accurate, quite frankly.
The next paragraph I want to add, this is the short paragraph, and I'm going to read it in just as itself, because there are two questions coming out of this paragraph that I think are interesting and have not been brought up before. It said, I would further note that over the course of my career, I have either prosecuted or presided over dozens of cases in which an offender left the scene of an accident, and I have never seen or heard a companion charge of tampering with evidence, nor have I ever heard of a passenger being charged with complicity. It saddens me to say that I believe that these these charges were brought, at least in part, as a result of my position as an elected judge and the resultant media coverage of the incident. This conclusion is supported by the fact that I was originally indicted and charged with 2 counts of complicity to vehicular assault, in spite of being absolutely irrefutable physical evidence that my wife was driving our vehicle. These 2 counts were left pending for months before being dismissed on the first day of the trial. Now, the 2 questions I have about this, because I had not heard about this media, that this is blamed on the media. Are you sure what he's talking about here? That the media covered it? Or his position as a judge, which he also says that...
Here's what I say. I think the charges were brought because the assistant Ohio Attorney General who was handling the case believed that they were appropriate, and so did the grand jury. The idea that charges are made or decisions are made because of an individual's position, it bothers me because I think he knows better. And this idea that he was charged or targeted because he was a judge, I just think is quite frankly a bunch of hogwash. I think it's just it's nonsense.
Well, what wasn't there? Hasn't it been said pretty much that because of his position, he should have known better?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, especially as someone who's either prosecuted or presided over, as he says, dozens of cases of leaving the scene. And irrespective, again, of the criminal conduct that has been found by Judge Cosgrove, irrespective of that, he doesn't say, I stayed in the car the whole time and I didn't get out of the car. And that's the point, and I think ultimately what would have been the crux of our argument with respect to the seeking the writ of quo warranto. He's been convicted of a felony, but perhaps just as equal to, if not more than that, there was a young kid in a car who was injured, and you got out, you saw him, you assessed the situation that this young man was injured, then you left. So, like I said, irrespective of whether or not you believe that constitutes criminal conduct, it does demonstrate a lack of decision-making and a level of selfishness that, in my humble opinion, a judge of the Common Police Court of the General Division shouldn't possess, quite frankly.
Well, here's the other part of this, and this is the question I asked. I mean, anybody can believe anything, and that anybody can write anything, and if you believe it's the media, or if you believe it's your position as a judge, that's okay. But what I don't understand is, this was not a jury trial. This was presided over by a judge, and the verdict was handed down by a judge, Judge Cosgrove. There was no jury involved here at all. So, I mean, anybody who would read this, it seems as if, and tell me if I'm wrong here, that he's saying the judge was influenced by the media in his position, because there was nobody else involved in this.
Yeah, I think you could certainly read it that way, that he believes that he is the victim of media coverage. I think you could certainly read that and take that position, that he believes that he's the victim of a media firestorm and that he has been called to account because the media thought that this story was, from his perspective, bigger than it was. The bottom line is, though, the media, in my experience, reports the news, right? And without getting into is the media slanted left or right or whatever, at the end of the day, I think that the news media, particularly the local news media, you included, and the writers at the Star and so on, you report the stories that are important. And certainly when a judge and his wife are in an accident and there's a young man who's seriously injured And according to what people have said, the witnesses who were there, the judge got out, saw what happened, got in his back in his car, and left the scene. That's a huge story. The media is going to report that. The media has an obligation to report that. I mean, the media is protected by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, right? I mean, the First Amendment that was passed, that's why it's number one, says the freedom of the press shall not be abridged by the Congress, right? And of course, it applies to the state legislatures as well. The media has an obligation, and they're going to report a story in which the judge is accused of this type of conduct. So the idea that the media is responsible for, you know, his ultimate position is just absurd.
As we finish out this letter, here's the rest of it. All of that said, I deeply regret and am extremely sorry about the fact that I did not remain at the scene or make a call to report the accident myself. As a Christian, as a judge, and as a human being, I know that I should have done so. Even if I, as a passenger, did not have a legal duty to remain at the scene and or to report the accident, I realized that I had a moral obligation to do so, and my failure is something with which I will have to live with for the rest of my life. I have no good reason for my failure except to say that I was paralyzed by fear and by concern for my wife, who I love. I only hope that the young man who was injured in the accident will be able to forgive us. I remain confident that my convictions will be reversed on appeal, but I recognize that my involvement in this incident has impacted public confidence in the judiciary, which breaks my heart. Serving as a judge was one of the great privileges of my life. It kills me to take this action and resign the position, but out of respect for the young man who was injured in the accident and in consideration of the expressed wishes of many of the citizens of Marion County, I feel that I must do so. And again, this comes back to the point over a year later. You know, when you say the people of Marion County, I'm doing this for them, I'm doing this for the boy, Colton Gray, who was injured in the accident, the fact that it took this long and now it's in this letter, again, comes off, I think, a little disingenuous.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in light of the fact that the calls by my office to his attorney were made and things. I mean, this was not, at least it does not appear to me that this action was one that he took after deep thought and contemplation about, you know, what was at stake here and so on. You know, it's an action that, as you say, you know, 1 year and 10 days after Colton Gray was hit, that we take. And it, you know, the story, I think, broke on June 24th of last year, about just under 3 weeks after the accident. And, you know, at that time, there were people that were certainly citizens calling for him to resign. And so the fact that it has taken this long, that we had to go through a trial, that we had to go through a sentencing, that we have to, you know, have to now go through an appeal, that the fact that all of these things have taken place in the meantime, yeah, I can certainly understand the view that some may say, this is a bit disingenuous. Sure.
In this letter, something that I think a lot of people might question is, if you are a passenger in a car and something like this happens, and you don't know if the person is alive or dead, and you don't call for medical attention, if you are not the driver, which I think is said here in this paragraph, that there was no legal duty to remain at the scene or report the accident. If you're the passenger, is that right?
Just Cosgrove certainly didn't believe that was right. You know, I think the circumstances dictate what your obligations are. And I think that when we'll take this incident from the evidence that we know that came out during the trial, there's an accident. His wife is in a hysterical state. But they both get out of the car and assess the situation and know that this young man is hurt. The act of then getting back in the car in an effort to leave the scene where you know somebody is unconscious. I disagree with this, with that statement that he wasn't under any legal obligation to do anything, because he knows leaving the scene is a crime, and by getting back in the car, I think Judge Cosgrove found getting back in the car, that action is certainly encouraging his wife to drive the car away, if that's in fact what happened. Judge Cosgrove said during her sentencing that her finding was that she believes that the two of them were complicit with one another in leaving the scene, and you can certainly infer that his conduct in getting back into the car and leaving encouraged his wife to do so. He didn't open the passenger side door, grab his cell phone, and say, "Okay, let me call for help real quick." That's not what happened here. By getting back in the car, and if we were to believe that he got back in the car and didn't say anything and just drove away, I think common sense would dictate that's not what happened. There's probably a lot of dialogue in that car. But again, Judge Cosgrove made these findings that they certainly were complicit with one another, and they left. And so his characterization of the events, I think Judge Cosgrove would certainly take issue with, and I think she did. And I think the notion that you don't have an obligation, as I said before, I think is just wrong.
Ray, this is a question, and you certainly know Judge Warner better than I would have known him, and maybe better than a lot of people would have known him. One of the big things in this whole mess, is what I'm going to call it, over the last year, is that any time Judge Warner has spoken, or his wife has spoken, or statements have been read, or letters like this have come out, they hit the public very wrong. Now, I can understand there's a lot of feeling because most people feel they did something wrong. But a lot of times there's a lot of empathy. Hey, you know what? I did something wrong. I made a big mistake here. I shouldn't have done this. I am so sorry for this boy, the family, and him, and I hope they can forgive me, so on and so forth. In this case, it is stunning that every time some statement is read or some letter is released, which I would assume that the judge knows the media, which he refers to, is going to pick up on, it comes off so badly. Is this the guy you know, and do you think it comes off badly?
The short answer is yes. When I read the letter yesterday, Judge Edwards had handed me a copy of it, and I remember thinking to myself, once again, we're just striking the wrong tone. Just, if you're going to resign, just quite frankly, just say you're sorry for all of what has transpired. I understand I cannot serve as a judge, and I hereby resign. I mean, this really could have been a 3 or 4 line letter, but we once again have to go to quite great lengths. I mean, this is what a half a dozen paragraph letter here, that you've just read to your audience, where once again we go through this whole monologue, essentially, that we heard at the sentencing hearing, that I didn't do anything wrong, I didn't do anything, that I was, there was nothing I was legally required to do, and so on. Yeah, it's just every step of the way, I agree completely, it just seems that the approach and the tone is just absolutely wrong. And if you notice, I mean, for example, even in, as I said to you before, I think after the sentencing, when I was last on your show, I went back and listened again, and he never says I'm sorry to Colton Gray. He never said it, and I went back through and listened twice to make sure that I didn't miss it, and I didn't. And yet, in this here, the first 1, 2, 3, 4, the first 5 paragraphs, are about him, And then finally, you know, it says here, the last sentence of the fifth paragraph, I only hope the young man who was injured in this accident will be able to forgive us. I mean, we take, you know, one, two, three, four, almost five full paragraphs of a six-paragraph letter, mind you, before we even mention the young man. So, again, I think it strikes a chord with people who are mad and upset, and I think that they're justifying in holding that position because, once again, it's a lot of words about, you know, how he didn't do, you know, he didn't do anything wrong.
Ray, I want to get your opinion on this because somebody said this to me, I won't say who, but last night after they read this letter, they said something about this letter and they picked out a sentence that I had not heretofore thought about since I had read the letter yesterday afternoon. And this was the what they said, and I found this very interesting. It's in the last paragraph of the letter, and again, this is written by Judge Warner, and it says, "Serving as a judge was one of the greatest privileges of my life, and it kills me to take this action to resign this position." Now, this happens in the same letter, as you said, not a whole lot is mentioned about Colton Gray. People feel he throws his wife under the bus in a paragraph. We talked about that earlier. But this was great for him. This was the privilege of his life. That this sentence really told, this is what somebody said, not what I'm saying, this told everybody what really is most important to him. Can you understand that?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that person is spot on, that what bothers him the most of I could certainly understand the thought. And the understanding from this letter, or the takeaway from this letter, that what he is most concerned about is losing his position as the judge.
It's the only thing in the letter that he said kills him.
Yeah.
And again, just coming back to this in our final 3 minutes here, and boy, I appreciate you coming on this morning.
Of course, I appreciate you having me.
Well, it's fascinating because this is a guy you know. And I, does this sound like him before this accident?
No. That's the thing. I've introduced Jason Warner as the Republican of the Year at a dinner. I've spent hours with him in court. I worked with him on an almost daily basis, and you get to know people. It was always professional. I mean, we never got together socially other than at party events or things of that nature. But, you know, it's spot on almost because, you know, the thing that would kill me if I was in this position would be that I hurt somebody. And that would be first and foremost. Secondarily to that would be the thought that my wife is in prison. That would be my second concern. You know, my job would be so far down the list that I don't think it would really be a consideration, quite frankly. If I knew that I hurt somebody, and I knew with my wife, and I knew that my wife was going to suffer some consequence as a result of that, my initial response would be, one, to get this young man help, but two, to protect my wife. As I said before, I can understand all of those emotions, but that's an incredible point that the person pointed out to you last night, that the only thing that kills him is not the fact that Colton Gray was hurt and going to have lingering effects from this. It's not the fact that his wife is going to be going to prison, or that his wife went to prison, and again, the Court of Appeals is going to consider both Mr. and Mrs. Warner's appeals. But what kills him is not one of those two things. What kills him is the fact that he has to give up his job, and that's pretty telling.
I thought that was a very interesting observation by that person last night.
Very much so.
But a final question here, Ray, because I think, and again, you're not involved in this, you're not in trying this case, so I want to let the audience know that.
Sure.
So your opinion is just your opinion here, but does, in your opinion, does this appeal look good? And just the follow-up to that, when he says things like this in a public letter about his wife, doesn't that send her into further jeopardy?
I'll answer those in reverse order. The things that he says about Mrs. Warner, and again, these are the same things that he had said, very similar things to what he had said at the sentencing hearing. I don't think the Court of Appeals will consider what he has to say, quite frankly. They're going to be looking at the legal standards and that have to be met and the facts that came out during the trial. So I think his words, while they certainly have an impact with the public at large, I don't think will have an impact with the Court of Appeals. In terms of, you know, the appeal itself, I watched the sentencing hearing a couple of times. I think that Judge Cosgrove made a very good record of, and by that I mean stated her findings on the record in open court as to why she believed that he was complicit in these two offenses. And ultimately we'll have to see what the Court of Appeals does, but I was impressed, quite frankly, that she did a very thorough and sophisticated did a very thorough job and had a very sophisticated analysis of her findings.
Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan. Ray, thank you so much for coming on short notice. I appreciate your candor, as always. I think it's very important for the people out there listening, and I'm sure we'll get together or talk very soon. Now that these restrictions have been lifted, maybe we'll be able to do something in studio sometime.
That sounds fantastic. Scott, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Ray. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to break back in 15 minutes.
5 days. Know the truth. Spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Adam the Computer Guy is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio, providing on-site and remote-based technical support, computer